Welcome to the New Horizons group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Mario, and I am an alcoholic. I have just muted everyone's microphone. It's very important to keep background noise to a minimum so we can all hear clearly. The New Horizons group resides in Bend, Oregon, Area 58. Because of the pandemic, we are currently meeting Monday to Thursday online. We use the same Zoom room and ID for all four of our online meetings. If you haven't already done so, we ask that you change your screen name to your first name and home group. This is how we will be calling on people to share. Now, I have asked Ron to please read what is AA.
Thank you, Mario. My name's Ron. I'm an alcoholic, and New Horizons is my home group. What is AA? We of Alcoholics Anonymous are many thousands of men and women who have recovered from alcoholism. We have solved the drink problem. However, we believe that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, is vital to permanent recovery. The purpose of an AA meeting is that of carrying the AA message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Therefore, we share our experience, strength, and hope as to stay sober and help others to recover from alcoholism. Experience with alcohol is one thing all AA members have in common. Therefore, we have to confine our membership to alcoholics. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend on money or conformity, regardless of age, gender, race, or religion. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation, meaning we are not allied with any religious or political organization. We do not affiliate with other 12-step fellowships, the treatment industry, or any other institution. We do not wish to engage in any controversy, and we have no opinion on outside issues. We neither endorse nor oppose any causes. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. Each member squares his debt only by helping others to recover. In the words of Bill W., sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you very much. Now I have asked Mike S. to read from Appendix 1 in the back of the book on the AA tradition and the tradition of the month in its long form.
Thank you, Mario. My name is Mike. I am an alcoholic. The AA tradition, to those now in its fold, Alcoholics Anonymous has made the difference between misery and sobriety, and often the difference between life and death. AA can, of course, mean just as much to uncounted alcoholics not yet reached. Therefore, no society of men and women ever had a more urgent need for continuous effectiveness and permanent unity. We alcoholics see that we must work together and hang together, else most of us will finally die alone. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are, we AAs believe, the best answers that our experience has yet given to those ever urgent questions. How can AA best function, and how can AA best stay whole and so survive? And the tradition of the month in the long form is tradition 8 on page 564. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire. But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed. But our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much. The format of this meeting is as follows. Our speaker will share with us until 12:30 what they were like, what happened, and what they are like now. During this time, please keep on mute. The speaker will then choose a topic from the first 164 pages of the big book. When the speaker is done sharing and reading, I will call names for sharing. If you unmute your phone to thank the speaker or to share, please remember to mute yourself again promptly. Please allow me to introduce our guest speaker, Leslie C. from the Searches Group in Smyrna, Georgia. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you, Mario. Hi, everyone. I'm Leslie. I'm an alcoholic. Searchers Group is my home group. We're outside of Atlanta in Smyrna, Georgia. And I am currently working steps 10, 11, and 12. I'm so excited to be here, you guys, but I'm also, for some reason, like nervous right now. My topic, which I guess I'll get to the topic towards the end, but this group has had such a like profound and direct impact on my sobriety over, I guess the last, I don't know, say 6 months or so. And so it feels like an even bigger privilege to be here. So I will just start from the beginning and hope that this goes well. I think that for me, it seems as though I was kind of just born this way. You know, when I was little, I'm the middle child of three girls. My sisters are both 4 years on either side of me. And for some reason, though, we were all raised in the same house with the same rules. The whole concept of like a moral compass was completely lost on me. And you know, as we were growing up, my sisters would be like, Leslie, quick, I'm in trouble. What do I say? Like, what's the lie? You know, and for me, it just came so quickly and so easy. And once words came out of my mouth, I was incapable of bringing them back in. Like, even in the face of being completely busted, I could never admit that I had lied. And that started when I was really, really young. Like, it's a joke now. But I was in preschool when I was three. And my uncle came to pick me up and I said to the teacher, please don't make me go home with that man. I don't know him. Just because I didn't feel like leaving. I started from classmates. If they brought something to show and tell that I wanted, I just took it and I put it in my cubby. And by five, I started running away from home. I just couldn't. There was something about me that I just couldn't sit with. I couldn't, at five, be comfortable with who I was in my own skin. And when things felt difficult to me as a five-year-old, I ran away. And my mom took me to see, well, I guess my parents, they took me to see a child psychologist because they were like, you know, the other two are not like this. And so is it us? Like, are we doing something wrong? And the child psychologist said, no, you know what? She's five. She will be fine. She's not a bad kid. Like, she's not going to be a sociopath or anything like that. She'll outgrow it. And I just never did. And what I didn't know was that lying and the stealing and the running away was setting me up for these, you know, for the anger and resentment and that whole irritable and discontent that goes with alcoholism. I started drinking when I was, I thought 15, but I recently found high school diaries. And so now I'm going to go with about 13, 14. And you know, I have a letter, in a shoebox right now from high school, from when I was 15 years old. The boy that I was dating at the time, his father was an alcoholic. And this letter from 1994, when I was 15, he said, you know, I'm really sorry that I called you an alcoholic. I could see that offended you. And I didn't mean to hurt you. And coming into the program, which I didn't do for another 20 years, but I started reading things in the book that just completely tied every single thing that happened in my life together, right? So that thing of how insulted I was at 15 to be called an alcoholic. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop, right? And then the next year, It says, you know, he is a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment. I was on a senior class trip. They took us from Philadelphia to New York City, 52 girls. They let us out. We were going to see a play, like a Broadway play. And we had, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours to just like go be free in the city of New York with no chaperones, no nothing. I think there were like 2 moms on that trip. And we went drinking. And the thing is, the difference between me and my 11 friends that were drinking was that when we all went to the Broadway play, they all were able to sit there and watch the show, but I couldn't. I had already started. I had had enough that I needed more. And so I left. I left the play with one other classmate, and that ended up getting us in a whole big bout of trouble with school, and school wanted to assess us for alcoholism, and our parents all said no. And all these signs were there when I was really young, is really where I'm going with this. And I just, you know, it was like, for so long I had someone to say, well, they're doing it too, until I didn't. And that kind of ran out when, after I had my first child. My husband was traveling a lot, and so I was home alone with a baby, and we had such a great baby, and he was sleeping through the night. And so that meant I had 12 hours every night where he was asleep and I was home alone. And so it started with like, I'll just have a glass of wine on a Tuesday night, and then another glass on Wednesday night. And then by the next week, it was 2 glasses. And so it just kind of started snowballing from there. And you know, the thing with my story is my husband has really severe heart disease. At that point, he had had 4 heart attacks. We'd had our son, then he had a 5th heart attack, and it completely changed our lives. Not that any of them were good heart attacks, but this 5th one was a complete doozy. He stopped drinking altogether, and I did nothing but drink. Like, I drove head first into the bottle, right? And so that started all these conversations of like, what are you doing? He kept asking me, are you running from something? Like, what's going on that you're not telling me? And I can do this under control. And page 31 in our book, that is my exact lived experience. Like, every single thing that it says, not before this time, only after this time, only at a, I put all these conditions around my drinking. Nothing worked. Every single day it was get up. Like, I had made the resolve, today's going to be the day I'm not going to drink. You know, and then I'd start like begging myself, and then pleading with myself, and then demanding of myself. And then by like 1, I would say, you know what, maybe just tomorrow I'll try. Tomorrow will be the day. And it wasn't until I actually physically could not stop that I started like really considering, what does this mean? You know, could I be an alcoholic? Because I was positive that I wasn't. I kept thinking, maybe I just don't want it badly enough, right? Because in every other area of my life, I can control things. Like, I can just control all the other areas of my life. This is the one area where I was completely out of my league. I had never thought that something would have so much power over me. And so he had said, you know, we owned another house, and he said, that house, the lease is up, the renter, the lease is up, they're leaving. I'm taking the kids. We'd had another child at this point. He said, I'm taking the kids and I'm leaving. I don't know how long I have to live, and I don't want to live like this anymore. And so I said, okay, you know what? No way. Nope. You're right. There's a problem. I'm not going to drink. And he said, "What? You have to know that this has to be for you. If you're doing it for me, it's not going to go well. You know?" And I said, nope, I don't want to drink for me. Like, it caused so many problems. There were so many consequences that it doesn't even matter, because we've all had similar consequences, I'm sure. But I promised I wouldn't drink. And he said, you know, if you feel like you want to, talk to me about it. Just don't hide it from me, and don't lie to me about it. And I said, I promise. And for the first week, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel good. I'm sleeping better. You know, I'm able to like play with the kids and all these things are great. And another week went by and I started getting really angry at him and really resentful that I was not allowed to drink because now I want it again. And so I had a conversation with him, like I said I would, and I said I wanted to drink. And he said, Leslie, it's been 2 weeks. I thought that we would talk about this like 6 months from now. And that, I mean, 6 months sounded like 72 years. Like it felt so incredibly far away that there was no way I could possibly make it to 6 months. So forget it all. And I started drinking on my own, hiding it, lying about it. And just every day feeling so incredibly full of guilt and shame and just disgustingness because I knew if he found out he was going to leave with my kids. And about 4 months later, he did. And one morning he came and woke me up and he slammed the bottle of vodka down and he said, you lied. And so, of course, I start sobbing and I say, please don't do this. Don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. And he looked at me and he said, are you kidding me? Don't do this to you. You did this to us. Like, you're the one that did this. Don't you dare put this back on me. And that was really my moment of like, oh man, I surrender. I said, I'm sick. Like I desperately need help. And honestly, at that point I wanted help. And so that is what got me here. You know, and it was such a shock because I thought, like, if I could just get the drinking under control, like if I could take care of the drinking, everything else would fall into place, you know? And I heard a talk with Clancy and he said, if alcohol is your problem, you're not an alcoholic. If alcohol is your solution, you're an alcoholic. And I was like, oh man, okay. So there's going to be a lot of work here. And, you know, I hear people, especially on this, in this group in particular, which has just the most vulnerable sobriety. I love this, but I hear the way that you guys, talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, like in general, about the program and the steps and the solution. You know, so like I said, you guys have really changed so much for me. But I fell in love with the people that are in my home group. Like I walked into my first meeting, I raised my hand, I said, my name is Leslie, I'm an alcoholic. I started sobbing because it was the first time in my entire life that I did like a full, complete, honest sentence. And they became, you know, my people, my tribe, my home group. And in that first year of sobriety, 6 months in, I got diagnosed with cancer. And already by that point, I had developed a really strong relationship with my higher power, with God. And the day after my diagnosis, I went out for a run and I said, God, like, please just carry me through this. You know, like, I just got sober. Life is really starting to turn around already. Like, please just carry me through. And then I said, no, wait, actually stop. You've carried me this far. Like, I don't want you to carry me. Just hold my hand through this. And sure enough, that's what happened. And as time progressed, like, okay, so I was diagnosed and then I went through treatment and I went through chemo and all this stuff. I was allergic to my chemotherapy. And so it was a really tough number of months. But when I picked up my first year medallion, I remember just crying and my sponsor was holding my hand and I said, this has been the absolute best year of my life. And I think for me, when you can say that when you're bald and like my skin was gray and I'm allergic to my chemotherapy, and I said, that's been the best year. That was the first year in my whole entire existence that I had lived like true to me, true to the person that I think God created me to be. And there's been so much since then in the last several years. But really what happened last March, right before COVID, was things were going great. You know, I thought that I had a good program. I thought that I was really happy with the fellowship that I'm part of. And I don't know, I just got this little like bug in my bonnet where I was like, I really want to start leaning into like prayer and meditation even more. You know, it's part of my daily life, but I just wanted to like lean in. I wanted to dig in. And sure enough, about a week later, the world shut down. And in that happening, it allowed me to go from Atlanta to Bend, you know, on a regular basis. And I met you guys in February when you had the Steps and Traditions workshop. Somebody from a group in Philadelphia had been posting about it saying, you know, this group, you got to go check out this group in Bend. Okay. So I come to you guys. It was Billy Ann and Chris R, and they like set my soul on fire. And not only did they do that, but hearing you guys, I literally, after that weekend, first of all, I got a new for that workshop. And I was like, oh man, I've been reading like a different book. Like, I don't even know what book I've been reading because my is somehow different from y'all, even though it's not, it felt like it was. So I said to my husband, you know, he was like, how was the workshop? And I said, it was like, we have to move to Bend. That's really at the end of the day, that's how it was. And he was like, okay, that is a little bit of your alcoholic thinking, right? But it's like, I just want to be with you guys. I want to just like soak up what you have, because what I learned was, as happy as I thought I was, it is not what you guys have. And there's just no other way to, you know, there's no mincing words there. But so I started attending your group regularly, and I started attending your business meeting. And that was also kind of a turning point. And I'm moving into what my topic is, which is around creating the fellowship that you crave. So if I'm, and the next best thing is learning as much from you guys as I can while I can, while we're all here and we have the Zoom platform, and being able to bring that back to my group. And, you know, a lot of times attending the business meeting and going to other groups' business meetings, like sometimes it's overwhelming and it feels like I'm drinking from a fire hose, and it's almost disappointing because it's like, man, I've been doing this for years and I feel like I'm on day one, but that's okay, because that is where I am in terms of the service structure, really. That's what this is mostly about. I just, you know, I have to accept and be okay with the fact that I just didn't know what I didn't know until I knew it, right? And I'm part of a group that doesn't know what they don't know. And it's not negligence. It's not any malice. It's just, we just didn't know. We have an area, but then we're outside of Metro Atlanta area. So we have districts and zones within that. And there's just not a lot of participation in the general service structure. There's not a lot of GSRs that show up to the district meeting. Case in point, I was at a meeting at my home group today, and somebody said, you guys changed the preamble. And we said, yeah, you know, we did. We voted on it at the last business meeting. And they were like, you're the only group in the area that's done that. And somebody else said, I don't think the other groups know. And we don't know because we don't have GSRs that go to a district meeting that have an active DCM. You know, there's no communication. And so it was like heartbreaking for me to learn that all these years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've never had a vote because we have never had a GSR that goes to the district meeting. But that's okay, because again, we are where we are and we're starting to change that. And so, you know, I feel like, now that I know, I have this responsibility to keep asking questions. Like I had to ask you guys, I was like, what is PI? Like, what is this? You know, and it's things that some of you may think, oh, wow, years in, it's like, you know, somebody would know that, but I didn't. So in our first, we were meeting quarterly business meeting wise, and I just kind of brought one, you know, the top priorities to my group and say, guys, listen, this is what I know now. This is what I'm going to present to the group. You know, what would you guys think about meeting monthly, right? If our business meeting is how God speaks through us and we're meeting four times a year, what does that say, right? We're not giving God a lot of room to speak. And they were completely on board with that. And some of the things were a little bit overwhelming and some of them weren't. But we walked out of that meeting and we made a couple of changes and we said, we are going to meet monthly. Our GSR does actually want to be active. He just didn't know because he didn't have anybody teach him when he took over the position. Our GSR is going to the assembly for the first time. And I don't know if we've ever had a GSR go to the assembly. And it happens to be one where a delegate's getting elected. So he'll have part in that. And we'll be able to look at the resumes and tell him, you know, what our thoughts are, but then give him his own right of decision at the conference, right? So we're all learning. And sometimes it definitely feels uphill, but I expect it to. I know that growth is typically painful, but that on the other side of the pain, I hope, will be, something more in line with what I see before me. And I think that's kind of all that I have, on the topic. I do want to read from the book what the actual, like, discussion, what the paragraph is. It's on page 164. And it says, still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that, so you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And there's an asterisk. It says, Alcoholics Anonymous will be glad to hear from you. The 459 Grand Central Station, New York, New York. I have started reaching out to both my inner group and GSO so much that I'm like, hi, it's me again. I was just curious. Could you tell me more about that 1954 letter? And can you tell me where to find this? And can you tell me, like, what's the story? What's the history with, you know, where did crosstalk come from? Like, I've written to them so much that I'm literally like, hey guys, me again. But every time they write back and, you know, it's always a non-answer, but always gives me so much to think about and to learn from. And it's just amazing. And I want to read just one other thing really quickly, because this is really, you know, as far as creating the fellowship that you crave and my own, like, personal desire to be much more involved, much deeper than just the group level. This is read at a meeting that I go to a lot. And this is like, it speaks to my core so much that this is the real reason why I have the desire. It's from the service manual, page S20, on why we need a conference. It's Bernard Smith speaking, and he says, we may not need a general service conference to ensure our own recovery. We do need it to ensure the recovery of the alcoholic who still stumbles in the darkness one short block from this room. We need it to ensure the recovery of a child being born tonight destined for alcoholism. We need it to provide, in keeping with our 12th step, a permanent haven for all alcoholics who, in the ages ahead, can find in AA that rebirth that brought us back to life. We need it because we, more than all others, are conscious of the devastating effect of the human urge for power and prestige, which we must ensure can never invade AA. We need it to ensure AA against government while inflating it against anarchy. We need it to protect AA against disintegration while preventing over-integration. We need it so Alcoholics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous alone is the ultimate repository of its 12 steps, its 12 traditions, and all of its services. We need it to ensure that changes within AA come only as a response to the needs and the wants of all AA and not any few. We need it to ensure that the doors of the halls of AA never have locks on them, so that all people for all times who have an alcoholic problem may enter these halls unasked and feel welcome. We need it to ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous never asks of anyone who needs us what his or her race is, what his or her creed is, what his or her social position is. Now that I have been introduced to this, it's like, it feels like a spiritual obligation to be in service in such a much deeper way than just at my group level. And I've learned that from you guys. And so I thank you for your time today. Thank you for letting me share.